2004. Thank you, Peter Angelos. The game. Baltimore Orioles 7, Boston Red Sox 2. Oriole Park at Camden Yards in Baltimore. Attendance was 47,683 on Sunday, April 4, 2004. The weather? Freezing. 40s plus strong wind from center field. Hall of Famers? Red Sox pitcher Pedro Martinez and designated hitter David Ortiz. Game highlights. Optimism for the 2004 season emanated from both dugouts this night. Boston had bolstered its pitching staff with five-time All-Star Curt Schilling joining opening night starter Pedro Martinez at the top of the rotation in hopes of a deep postseason run. Red Sox Nation was wondering if this just might be the year they would finally break the curse of the Bambino. Where better to begin the quest for their first World Series title since trading away Babe Ruth to the Yankees after the 1918 season than Baltimore, Babe's birthplace. A national television audience joined the fun to see Baltimore's expensive new roster energize the local fan base, a feeling markedly absent the past six losing seasons. Ownership shelled out big bucks during the offseason to lure several free agents, including Atlanta's three-time All-Star catcher, Javi Lopez, Oakland's 2002 American League MVP shortstop, Miguel Tejada, and Texas's slugging first baseman, Rafael Palmeiro, back for his second stint with the Orioles. All three shined on opening night. Lopez hit his first pitch as an Oriole off Martinez into the left field seats and later doubled home Tejada and Palmeiro in the seventh. Less than 6 months earlier in Game 7 of the 2003 American League Championship Series, then-Boston manager Grady Little allowed Martinez to face a few too many batters in the eighth inning. Four Yankee hits and three runs later, the game was tied. New York eventually won in 11 innings, and Little was fired. In the opposing dugout that night in the Bronx was Joe Torre's respected bench coach, Lee Mazzilli. On opening night 2004, Mazzilli had the same field-level view of Martinez, this time from the Orioles dugout, as the team's new manager. The story. Lee Mazzilli's first day as a major league manager began with a phone call from his mentor, Joe Torre, and a pregame clubhouse visit from a man he'd never met before, Orioles owner Peter Angelos. For the past four seasons, Mazzilli had learned much from Torre, whose Yankees had won six of the previous eight American League pennants and four World Series. The Hall of Famer's pregame message to his mentee-turned-division rival was simple. Be yourself and trust your convictions. It's unlikely the 74-year-old Angelos could have related to the same advice. He had never aspired to be like anyone but himself, for better or worse, and the only convictions he trusted were his own. Over the years, he was branded by sports writers as a meddler, not trusting the recommendations of those he'd hired to run the ball club. In hiring Mazzilli, however, Angelos had been hands-off. Approving the recommendation of the search committee led by his co-general managers Jim Beatty and Orioles pitching great Mike Flanagan. A season and a half later, Angelos was more hands-on when Mazzilli was fired after a three-week summer losing skid. In 1993, this personal injury lawyer's group outlasted Jeffrey Loria at a bankruptcy auction, and Angelos became managing partner and principal owner of the Baltimore Orioles. It marked the return of local ownership of the franchise for the first time since National Brewing Company president Jerry Hofberger sold the team to Washington, D.C. lawyer Edward Bennett Williams in 1979. Sports writers, fans, fellow owners, and others have been trying to figure out Peter Angelos ever since. Most have failed. One writer who tried harder than most was Sports Business Journal correspondent Bruce Schoenfeld, who interviewed more than 40 people in 2013, most off the record, about one of the most unique owners in sports, a contrarian who didn't fit the mold. Schoenfeld brought to the effort a more objective lens than any local sports writer. He talked to past and current players, front office executives, politicians, law firm associates, childhood friends, and family members. Everyone, it seemed, spoke to Schoenfeld, but Angelos himself, who did not respond to Schoenfeld's invitations to participate. Schoenfeld's cleverly written piece titled "The Complicated Peter Angelos" took a man-in-the-mirror approach. His 5,000-word essay seemed to get deep into Angelos' head. In 2021, 8 years after it was published, I asked Schoenfeld to summarize his findings. He declined. "I don't know that you can," he said. "He's a very complex man." "What matters most to Peter Angelos?" Schoenfeld asked Angelos rhetorically in the 2013 article. "Those close to you don't hesitate. It's the law offices of Peter G. Angelos, PC, first, and everything else after. The firm you started in 1961 isn't just your place of business. It defines you." "He's a lawyer," says Andy McPhail, who ran the Orioles baseball operations from 2007 to 2011, who happens to own a baseball team. "That sets you apart from the dark suits who fill the seats at the owners' meetings," Schoenfeld continued. "But it's hardly all that sets you apart. You look around at the corporate titans who have become rich by tilting the playing field and taking advantage of the working man on behalf of the moneyed interests, and you feel the bile rising. They're fat cats, tycoons, Republicans. You're a battler, a laborer, a Democrat. Better than they are? Smarter, more honorable, more worthy of admiration? Damn right you are." In his earliest days as Orioles owner, Angelos took bold steps to strengthen his franchise, winning over players and local fans while infuriating his fellow owners. Fans were worried that by spending so much to buy the team, he wouldn't have money left to invest in players. They were wrong. During the first offseason under Angelos, the Orioles spent more than $40 million on free agents, a significant amount by 1994 standards. A year later, when Acting Commissioner Bud Selig and the other owners announced plans to have strike-breaking scabs replace Major League players for the 1995 season, the labor-friendly Angelos refused. Once the strike ended, angry fans in other cities showed their disgust with players and owners by staying away in droves. But not Oriole Park. Blue-collar Baltimoreans and well-heeled travelers continued to flock to Camden Yards to experience the game's best ballpark and appreciate baseball's most expensive lineup. "Alone among the 28 franchises, yours supported the players during negotiations, most visibly by refusing to authorize replacements," Schoenfeld's man in the mirror told Angelos. "You'd taken labor's side against management all your life. Never had a corporate client, you liked to brag." "Peter hates corporate America," says a former associate who spent much of his adulthood working for your firm. "This is a guy who wore short-sleeved shirts to work with a tie. He had his office in a blue-collar section of Baltimore. He was a peasant who got rich and bought a baseball team." By 1996, the Orioles had brought in two of the best leaders in baseball, field manager Davey Johnson and general manager Pat Gillick. Both men were winners everywhere they'd been and had World Series championships on their resumes with the New York Mets and Toronto Blue Jays, respectively. The Orioles flourished, advancing to the American League Championship Series in both 1996 and 1997. After 4 years, the honeymoon was over, and one by one, the legends and Hall of Famers departed. Hall of Fame broadcaster John Miller went home to San Francisco after the 1996 season, following 13 glorious years in Baltimore. A year later, Johnson elected not to return, and Gillick departed once his contract expired a year after that. Pitcher Mike Mussina continued his Hall of Fame career as a New York Yankee in 2001, and Cal Ripken retired at the end of that season. By the time the 2004 campaign got underway, Orioles fans had endured six consecutive fourth-place finishes. Only the expansion Tampa Bay Devil Rays were worse. In spite of the 1994-95 player strike, attendance at Orioles Park averaged more than 44,600 per game from 1992 to 97. From 1998 to 2003, it dropped 14%. To local sports media and fans, the once proud Orioles franchise was disappearing before their eyes, and they largely blamed Angelos. He generally refused to engage with his media critics, except to occasionally set the record straight when he felt the public had been misinformed. Meanwhile, further south, another group of fans and sports writers was growing more hostile. Washington was still without a team of its own, and the trip to Baltimore was becoming harder to justify. Efforts to return Major League Baseball to the nation's capital were gaining momentum, and Angelos was leading a one-man crusade to derail it.
"It's not going to work,"
he was quoted by Tom Heath in the Washington Post in November 2002.
"If you put a team in Washington area, it would make it impossible for either team, Baltimore or Washington, to generate the revenues to be competitive in the divisions in which they play. Washington has the capital," he continued. "It has the White House, Congress, the Smithsonian. It has the government office, museums, and the mall. What else does it want?"
Many in Washington at the time would gladly have traded Congress and the White House for a baseball team. In late 2001, the owners voted 28-2 to contract Major League Baseball from 30 teams back to 28, just 3 years after the expansion Devil Rays and Arizona Diamondbacks had completed their inaugural seasons. The struggling Minnesota Twins and Montreal Expos were on the chopping block. Legal action in Minneapolis forced the Twins to honor their stadium lease, effectively nixing the owner's plan. Major League Baseball took ownership of the Expos and spent the next 3 years looking for a new home for the team. Washington was on the short list. Angelos relentlessly continued his crusade right up through opening day 2004 and beyond. Yet by the end of the season, the battle appeared over. On September 29, 2004, one day before the 33rd anniversary of that last Washington Senators game, it was official. The Expos would be moving to D.C. for the 2005 season. Angelos wasn't done yet. When Major League Baseball relocated Montreal's Expos to Washington, it made a huge mistake. Schoenfeld's Man in the Mirror reminded Angelos in 2013. Commissioner Bud Selig announced that the deal was done before working out how you would be compensated for encroachment on your broadcast territory. MLB underestimated you. They thought Peter would be reasonable, remembered Joe Foss, who helped orchestrate Angelos' purchase of the club in 1993 and served as the team's COO for the next 14 years. And Peter had absolutely no intention of being reasonable. He felt he had a responsibility to protect the economic value of his franchise for himself and his minority owners. And his hometown. Even though all 29 of his fellow owners voted to approve the relocation of the Expos, they still had to finalize a plan to compensate Angelos. After 6 months of negotiations, he accepted financial guarantees worth hundreds of millions of dollars, including a disproportionate share of a new regional sports channel. It would control the television rights to both the Orioles and the new Nationals franchise for 20 years or more. In return, he agreed to something he had vowed he would never accept: a team in Washington. Hofberger, whose legacy of local ownership Angelos restored in Baltimore, had also once struggled with the prospect of peaceful coexistence between Baltimore and Washington. According to Hofberger's April 13, 1999 obituary in the New York Times, quote, "When the Griffith family, owners of the Washington Senators, expressed opposition to the sale of the St. Louis Browns to Baltimore investors in 1953, Mr. Hofberger offered to have his brewery sponsor Senators games. That deal helped soften the Senators' opposition to a nearby competitor for their fan base," unquote. The price Washington owners would one day pay to soften Angelos' opposition was somewhat higher than a beer sponsorship. Opening night 2004 was my 29th opener in Baltimore. It was also my last. For opening day 2005, I was going home. Thank you, Peter. For the box score and play-by-play, visit OpeningDay5050.com.